On today's College Football Inquirer, Sacramento State is now in the MAC. If you didn't know, Northern Illinois was already in the Mountain West. North Dakota State's in the Mountain West, too. Realignment is, at this point, completely out of control. Where does the madness end? Plus, updates on all the latest eligibility lawsuits since the last time we talked. Trinidad Chambliss has gotten his injunction. Joey Aguilar at Tennessee is trying to get an injunction. We'll find out what happens next and what the difference is between these two cases. Also, we talked last week about how someone asked Mr. Beast if he'd donate $100 million to East Carolina to win a national title. And I said, there's no way that would win you a national title. And Stephen Godfrey begged to differ. So I want to know Stephen Godfrey's plan for spending Mr. Beast's money and bringing the Pirates a natty. I want to know how this happens, because if it can, well, just imagine the content. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. And we start with a story that defies geography and really defies a lot of everything everybody's been telling us about everything. Sacramento State is a member of the FBS now. As a member of the MAC in football, that would be the Mid-American Conference. That would be the one that is largely based in Ohio and Michigan. Ross Dellinger, what is going on here?
Well, the MAC has become a coast-to-coast conference, Andy, because, of course, they have UMass. They added UMass last year. So we got UMass and we got Sacramento State across the country. By the way, that's 3,000 miles, I think, from UMass to Sacramento State. So if you're going to get on the road and take no breaks, it's about 45 hours to get from one to the other. So, yeah, you know, Sacramento State pitched multiple FBS leagues their proposal to basically buy into a conference. They're trying to get into a conference so they can get into FBS. Their waiver to get into FBS as an independent was denied over the summer. And so that left them with only one pathway in, and that's to get into a conference and thus get into FBS. So their proposal was something we've probably never quite seen in college athletics. I mean, we've seen a lot of buying your way into a conference.
SMU?
This is the biggest one. Yeah, I mean, SMU not taking distribution for 9 years from the ACC. And then obviously North Dakota State just last week or a week and a half ago, buying their way in at $12.5 million. We saw Memphis offered $200 million to buy into the Big 12. That was sort of denied. The Big 12 decided not to do it. But up to this point, as far as deals that are done, we haven't seen a school spend this much money to buy their way in. They're spending $18 million is going to the MAC. $5 million in an entry fee to just get into the FBS, the normal standard entry fee. And then they're paying for 5 years, four games a year for MAC teams to travel to Sacramento, which is around 150 to 200,000 a trip. So it's an extra $3 or $4 million on top of that. So just that, just the entry fees and the cost to fly MAC teams out, it's going to be about $27, $28 million.
I would like to point out one clarification. We mentioned SMU in that. Have you guys ever seen those TikToks of like they ask SMU students, like, what does your dad do for a living?
What's your biggest financial flex? We have a helicopter. Yeah.
Without knowing a ton about Northern California in the area, I don't know if there's that many Sac State alumni who are maybe operating in the PJ sector quite as frequently as Southern Methodist. I don't want to make this all about Sac State, because it's more a referendum on like what the hell we're calling the FBS at this point. But like, Ross, where is this money coming from?
Yeah, that's a good question. The university president, Luke Wood, says the money is coming from mostly from buy games. Obviously, when Sacramento State plays a power conference or another FBS team over the years and over the next 5 years, they'll get money. And so they're banking sort of on most of the money to come from there. But something that should be sort of mentioned here is most of Sacramento State's athletic budget is subsidized by the university. And we're in a state to kind of sort of, as Andy mentioned, like sort of expand this conversation in general to this situation we're seeing right now, is that especially with the athlete compensation in schools' budgets, everything is losing money. like every sport's going to end up losing money. You're not going to really turn a profit on anything anymore. And so I think a university has to decide, is this our marketing branding arm and we're just going to start pumping money into it and view it as another department on our campus,
mm-hmm.
or not? And I think places like SMU in Sacramento State have already clearly made that decision. And they're just going to take university money and they're going to either pump it into the athletic department or subsidize it subsidize athletics in other ways. And I think that's what they're doing.
Can we just stop and talk about how stupid this all is, though? The best meme I saw all weekend, and I'm sorry I'm not giving the person credit. I don't have it in front of me.
Please say it's Ballsack.
Yeah, Ballsack.
No, it's two one. Groups of people that appear to be on airplanes. And it says basically, when the Northern Illinois football team is going to fly to its conference game in Hawaii and passes in midair the Sacramento State football team going to its conference game at UMass. Northern Illinois just left the MAC to join the Mountain West. Northern Illinois is in the same conference as Hawaii. And UMass and Sacramento State are in the same conference. This is incredibly stupid.
Yeah, makes no sense. And a lot of folks thought that the Mountain West would maybe eventually take Sac State and North Dakota State, both of them, like would take two at a time. And
that makes sense.
You know, they decided against that because Sac State presented this proposal to the Mountain West and the Pac-12, most notably, and they both turned it down. But geographically, it would have made a lot more sense.
But here, where does this all end? Like, what's the natural endpoint? Because I was told by lots of people who were begging for a congressional law that nobody would want to do this anymore because it's just too expensive. Seems like people still want to do it. In fact, want to do it in a way that completely inconveniences everyone.
I think you have to look at the value proposition, and we need to find, we kind of need to find the mean and median here for what a transition means and then what a transition up means. Sac State had football. Brennan Marion was the head coach last year. So they have a pattern of, hey, you know, if you come to this university, you get to experience college football at a particular level. What I'm curious is this all just a misinterpretation of this Alabama theorem where when Saban was there, they were winning national titles. You had all these Wall Street Journal stories about, oh, this is now the new front porch of the university and our enrollment's up and our out-of-state enrollment's up. And this is all because we're winning national titles on television. I've heard that parroted back by so many different individuals at so many different sub-levels of college football.
Including Sac State's president, you saw about out-of-state tuition, out-of-state recruiting of students.
And I'm really curious, Ross, because there are so many pieces of context missing as you continue to take the step down. If you're talking about football as a front porch for a university, Alabama on the old, you know, CBS 230 Central, sorry, God's time zone, 230 Central broadcast on CBS, that's as big and marquee as you can get in terms of a display item.
10 million
recruiting.
People watching your 3.5-hour infomercial, yes.
The worst, but you know, the one thing that I haven't seen anybody talk about yet is, do the people in California, in Northern California, understand when the majority of MAC conference football games are played?
It's Tuesday night.
Boys, dog, the first thing I thought...
What are you going to do?
When this came out is, they opened a new TV window for Tuesday night action.
Late night action, action after dark.
10:30 p.m. Eastern on a Tuesday night, baby. Let's go.
10 p.m. kickoff. There you go.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm curious about. I just don't know if that sort of apron that they think they're achieving in terms of exposure is ever possible.
Is it possible to open a casino on campus? Because really, that's who's going to be watching their games. So
yeah.
Man, if you can attract gamblers willing to pay out-of-state tuition, maybe that's your market.
That's a Dan Wetzel special. I interviewed him on one of my old podcasts about the Mac and thinking like I was going to get this Midwest sentimentality. He's like, nobody watches that but the Gamblers. So like that was my Wetzel, by the way.
That was a good Wetzel.
Hi, Dan. Thanks. I didn't have a Miller Lite in my hand when I did it. Mm. I would maybe some commission out there has commissioned a study about transition and what the actual ROI is. Because there is something to say for SMU, very deep pocketed, saying, all right, we're going to go to the ACC. We're going to play Florida State. We're going to have games. Exactly. Right. So definitely ROI there. And no, they don't really need the television revenue. They have deep enough pockets as it is. I am curious how this works out as you look at the schools that have moved up a tier. And for this exercise, I would consider moving from FCS to a low G5, moving up a tier. So it's the same as SMU mm-hmm. moving up a tier from the American to the ACC. Yeah. And then also, you know, looking at what's the long-term implication for the Red River schools? What's the long-term implication for the LA schools? I think it's all bespoke though. And I know we're not going to make this about Sac State, but I'm kind of flummoxed. The eagerness with which some of these programs have to move into such an unstable environment. I feel like I'm repeating myself from the North Dakota State segment. I'm just curious where you think the profit is, because you've invested so much money. We have to have a profit here, guys. We have to have a long-term profit center.
Maybe it's a better business than people realize, because as I like to point out to everyone who says they're all broke. When their crane's up building new things, you ain't broke. When you're broke, you're selling pieces off. That's what broke people do. I work for a newspaper. I know broke. These people ain't broke. Somebody's paying them money. Somebody's willing to give them money. There is a revenue stream, and they're doing this because they think they will get some sort of positive ROI out of it. Now, Godfrey, I think you're right. It is not necessarily a dollars and cents ROI. It might be a hearts and minds ROI that results in dollars and cents later, or at least that's what they're hoping.
Well, there's money there, and you remember when they were making the push, it was really hard last year to get in the Pac-12. They had at least gotten commitments from donors of allegedly $50 million of NIL if tied to the Pac-12. That was tied.
Yeah, I asked Brendan Marion who he was going to recruit.
Yeah.
He had quite a list.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was tethered to the Pac-12. Now, there are promises and commitments that I think were tethered to an FBS move. So I think they have a pretty big enrollment, and the enrollment cliff right is upon us. So I think that's why Luke Wood was discussing with me one of the big reasons for the move was enrollment and how FCS to FBS, just the platform on ESPN, the televised games, all that stuff, just gets you more notoriety and is better for the brand. He's looking at it as their branding and marketing arm.
That's also, I'm just going to tell you, he's approaching that from a disingenuous place, because California cost of living has skyrocketed in recent years, and they're also trying to prevent students from leaving to go out of state for an actual cheaper experience. It's the same as the population shift from Southern California into places like Arizona and New Mexico. So if you're a large public in a highly affluent area in Northern California, your concern is just, but you're, again, I think your methodology here is misguided. This is people wanting to do this and justifying it with some nobler claim of enrollment. I'm just curious what the end game is here.
The end game is to probably get into the Pac-12 eventually, right? There's a five-year deal. So that's probably the end game, is to move up again. And then the end game after that, the end game is to move up again if they can. It's just keep elevating.
Let's widen this lens out. Speaking of end games, because none of the current realignment moves, none of them have made sense. Texas and Oklahoma was the last one that kind of sort of geographically made sense,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I guess the Big 12 taking the schools it took from the Pac-12, but that was not the plan. So when does it start making sense again? Because we keep talking about what's next? What Super League, this. When will the
that's
next...
When it-
realignment
when it
move
does.
That makes sense.
I mean, none of it makes sense. None of it's supposed to. I mean,
it's some kind of Super League or different division that brings together the top brands, probably as the next thing to happen. Whether, I don't know if it's going to make sense, but certainly if that does happen, the brands that will be in that group and the schools that will be in that group may not make a lot of geographic sense, but certainly from a brand value and all that stuff will probably make sense.
The first thing they'll do, though, Ross, is break them into geographical divisions that kind of look like all the old conferences.
Well, I mean, a lot of the talk in D.C. is, I think we discussed it here about like modifications a few weeks ago, modifications to the SCORE Act that are undergoing and still undergoing. And one of them is, hey, or at least a discussion, this hasn't been any kind of amendment to the bill, but is like, can we just restructure this whole thing? Can we just blow it all up, consolidate media rights?
What is the
rearrange
thing?
The conferences, all of that stuff. You know,
the thing being the idea of identifying via conference?
Well, yeah.
You said blow the thing up. Are you talking about like, so I know what everybody's thinking in their head. This is what I'm leading you to is like, the SEC is healthy. The Big Ten is healthy. The ACC is in constant tumult. And then the Big 12 is a sort of flotilla of pirates. Shout out your mark. But everyone else, it's the identity is essentially fading, or if it hasn't faded out completely. Like, what? How do you explain the MAC now with Sac State there and Northern Illinois and the Mountain West? That's what we're getting at, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Are you going to force these lower tier conferences to essentially dissolve and then redraft?
I don't know, right? I mean, you've seen the models out there where the Sports Broadcasting Act has changed, allowing everybody to consolidate media rights in FBS. And then from that point, if you're consolidating all together, do you end up rearranging conferences later on? It's hard to see that actually happening. It's easier to see happening a bigger Super League type of deal.
That's the part I like. There's so many steps in between, Ross, whether it's you need congressional action to change the Sports Broadcasting Act, which would allow them to all sell their TV rights together, which is the thing, because I always, you know, it's just like anything else, you follow the money.
Yeah.
If they want to make more money, they would sell their TV rights as one.
Yeah.
As Ross, I think you and I were talking to the same person a few weeks ago, when this person who is very, very smart told us the real money, the only way they make the real, real money, where the dollars per eyeball start to approach what the NFL gets per eyeball, is if they sell the whole regular season and the whole postseason
playoff
together,
right.
They cannot do now.
They'll never do that.
Right.
Well, they will if it's...
was forced upon them by the federal government, I guess, too, potentially.
Hang on. Sankey's not going to do that. They're not going to give up that. They're not going to give up their agency in that process. You would have to have multiple university presidents or leaders, whatever you want to call them, in the Southeastern Conference, go to him and say,
if the price is right, they will give up whatever you want them to give up.
Everybody is money hungry.
That would have to be communicated.
You used to work in wrestling. Everybody has a price for the $1 million man.
Oh, man. Yeah, so does he. Well, his son does. He's facing jail time. Shout out, Brett Favre. Why'd you block me on Twitter? I think we're jumping around a lot of topics here. And I think the takeaway is that the anxiety, even on the media side, not just the fans, the people we run into and ask us questions about college football, the middle tier, the group of whatever the hell we're going to call this thing, is growing more and more bloated, but also unstable. I think in order to kick off what Ross is talking about, or what has been sort of hypothesized, is someone's going to have to tap out. And I think that might happen where the revenue doesn't match the promise on some of these schools,
well,
and
that,
you're shipping your softball team
when,
across the country, and then eventually someone just says, hey,
bottom of one of these leagues is going to say, we can't. But the thing that's happened before that is in the last 2 weeks have said, no, we're tapping in.
Yes.
Like,
right.
Well, you know, hubris is a powerful thing. But if you look at Idaho as a case study, Idaho is healthier now financially and more successful in their sports by actually stepping back down.
Cool.
So if you don't know, Idaho was at the FBS level. They decided we're going to go back to the FCS level. They're also in one of the most geographically isolated parts of the country, short of Hawaii, in terms of getting teams in and out. They're basically next door to Washington State. So I question the motives here. I'm incredulous about that. whatever kind of brand you're trying to build in the group of five, group of six, group of whatever, it's getting harder and harder to do that because of the transience of all this, the uncertainty of all this. I would love to spend three segments on the show giving you like a G5 map of how we should cut this up and what we should do. And I do think if a greater separation occurred, let me throw this by y'all. Rather than think of the FBS as a whole right now, what if there's separation at the very top where it's the big two and or big four that are separating now autonomously and they're working on their own, they're working their own TV rights, whatever that might be. And then you have this middle class. And if they were to join, if the Sunbelt, CUSA, MAC, Mountain West, and PAC, whatever, were to actually negotiate as a unit for television rights, as inventory, I'm not separating them into their own postseason. I know a lot of people get really sensitive about that. I do too. I think that would suck. Even though I love the FCS playoff, I think you can't really do that at the next level. That feels like a solution to then say, all right, Sac State, you're going to be on the west side of this thing. Northern Illinois, we're going to put you here. We're going to have some sort of scheduling component, very similar to what we talked about with that Pac-12. Andy, like we could have, at the end of this, if Northern Illinois has 10 or 11 wins and they're vying, we pluck them and we pluck Boise and then we pluck like, you know, App or whomever, and then they all play each other in the final week or whatever, if you're still fighting for that one playoff spot in the big boy tournament, the Disney Invitational. So I could see a collective action, Ross, happening from the middle sooner and more logically than I could from the very top.
Right. No, I think that's fair. And I think the group of six commissioners, they've met a lot together over the last like year and a half, 2 years. And this is one thing that it's been, I think that's been discussed. Maybe not seriously, but is more of a like, it's been, this is how it's been described to me, is forming a national sort of football conference at the G6 level, like getting all the big football brands together to be competitive as much as they can with the A4. I know that has been something discussed, and I think Tim Fernetti of the American's been actually public with that idea of, hey, let's have like a national football conference. One of the things we've seen the last few months is I think three schools have moved conferences to go football only.
Yeah.
Right. So they're Northern Illinois, North Dakota State, and now Sacramento State are playing football only in another league. And I wonder if we will start to see more of that where you do have these sport only conferences developing. I just wonder if that is also in the future.
We already do in the sports we don't care about.
Yeah.
Big Ten hockey is not, like, I don't think Maryland has a team. I don't think, you know, like, Big Ten hockey includes other schools that are outside
Notre Dame.
Big Ten in football.
Notre Dame's in the Big Ten in hockey.
Yeah. So, and there are other sports where this is the case. And there's been a lot of pearl clutching about that one. And I'm not even trying to troll here. I really don't understand what the problem is if we just align sports by conference rather than schools. I that seems logical enough to me. Big East basketball was always a great argument.
Well, it's almost like they're completely different businesses. Big time football and
the bottom lines are very different.
Are businesses and the other sports at those, even those schools, are charities. It's two completely different business models. So
yeah, I mean, I know there are profit generating men's hockey and women's hockey teams at the very top,
it's
there's profit generating
between,
baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about under 20 programs in baseball and hockey that are turning a profit.
Yep. So we'll see what happens here, but again, like Godfrey said, nobody's tapping out yet. We got more people tapping in. None of it makes sense. They do need to figure this out eventually, but they're not going to figure it out today. What they might figure out in the next few days is whether everybody's been running to the courthouse to try to get an injunction or not. We will have an update on the Ole Miss quarterback Trinidad Chambliss, who appears to be playing in 2026 for legal reasons. Also, Tennessee quarterback Joey Aguilar, we're still waiting on a decision on him. We'll talk about that when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and we have legal news. Okay, well, when we left you last, Trinidad Chambliss was headed into a courtroom in Mississippi. That day, all that stuff wrapped up. In fact, we got to listen to the judge read an order for, I think, a whole hour.
Oh, we got to listen to a judge,
over,
all right.
Yeah, over an hour, I think.
Appeal proof.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, apparently everybody in the courthouse wanted to get across the street to a place called El Jefe, which was still having happy hour at the time.
Pittsboro, Mississippi is the most nowhere location humanly possible for one of these.
Did you see what was across the street from the courthouse? It was a junkyard. Across the street is a junkyard.
Ross, you'd be the only person that I could talk to. Have you ever driven? It's south of Bruce.
No, I don't think I've ever driven through there.
So I had to do my first gig out of college. I did preps in Northeast, and that's the only time I've driven through Pittsboro, I think, was either going to or leaving Bruce on the way.
Bruce.
Maybe Bruce, to... Oh, my God. I can't remember. Maybe to Pontotoc.
What is it, like 45 minutes south of Oxford, maybe?
It is the middle of freaking nowhere. So I really don't. I was curious why the whole college football world descended on Pittsboro, Mississippi.
Pittsboro.
That's where they had the hearing.
Yeah, it's got some Grisham energy for sure.
Yeah, the whole hearing was ripped from a John Grisham novel, including
none of the attorneys wore seersucker, though, because it was apparently the wrong season for...
It's too cold. No, only summer only.
Too cold.
Yes, let's even though it's a little old now.
Yeah,
we have
Trinidad
to talk
Chambliss
about
is going to play.
How this
and,
yeah,
and
Trinidad's
Ross,
gonna play.
I want you to help explain, cuz this is something I've been trying to explain to people and it's hard. Trinidad Chambliss suing for eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
Gets his injunction. Joey Aguilar from Tennessee suing for eligibility. We're waiting to see what the judge says. They had the hearing on Friday. The judge had some very pointed questions for the attorneys, far more than the judge in the Trinidad Chambliss case had. In both cases, the cases are in state court. In both cases, the judges were selected, you know, that venue was selected because the judge may be a homer for the school. I'll point out that
maybe.
Yeah. But I'll point out that the judge that denied Charles Bediako, the Alabama basketball player, his injunction, has an undergrad degree from Alabama and IDs as a Crimson Tide fan. So it doesn't guarantee you anything.
No.
Yeah. But, well, there's a big difference in sports there.
True. Mm-hmm. But Ross, I want you to help explain the difference in these two cases.
Yeah, big differences. The Trinidad case, he's asking for a sixth year of college eligibility. Aguilar is asking for an eighth year of college eligibility. And Trinidad's asking for a medical red shirt for a season in which he says he was too sick to play.
Mm-hmm.
And Aguilar is asking the court to exempt his junior college season in the NCAA eligibility standards, sort of act like it didn't count when it comes to NCAA eligibility. Similar like the Diego Pavia stuff. It involved the junior college season. So these are very different. Trinidad had, I think Trinidad had a pretty good argument, even if it wasn't tiny little Mississippi town.
No matter how you feel about tonsillitis and how serious it is.
Very serious. Okay.
Yeah,
but there are thousands of NCAA cases in history where somebody asked for a medical hardship. Some of them got granted, some of them didn't.
Yeah.
The application of that might be termed somewhat arbitrary. In the Joey Aguilar case, there has never been a case where they're like, we'll just ignore your JUCO stuff. Like, the Diego Pavia thing was the NCAA was treating players who spent 2020 in JUCO differently than it was treating players who spent 2020 in the NCAA.
Right.
It was clearly unfair. It was very specific to that year. And Joey Aguilar was in JUCO in 2020. The difference is he's also JUCO 2019.
Yeah. He was in JUCO 4 years. He played two. He was in JUCO 4 years. And he's asking the NCAA his last JUCO year, his last JUCO season, not to count it. Similar, we've seen some of these cases, and we've seen a lot of judges actually rule for the NCAA in these cases when it comes to exempting junior college seasons. So we'll see what happens there. But guys, I know it's kind of old, but what happened in the courthouse in Mississippi was straight out of a John Grisham novel. And it was really something. I mean, from the very start, the invocation, the man who gave the invocation, part of his prayer was to ask for an extended eligibility in the middle of the courtroom before the hearing, before the hearing started. Asked the Lord Jesus for extended eligibility for Trinidad. So that's how it started.
Right.
The judge got up there, and I mean, just typical everything about the judge. Again, John Grisham character. Right.
He was oozing just Mississippi.
Dripping. Yeah, oozing. Oozing country Mississippi.
You never want to ooze Mississippi. You know, trust me. Yeah, it's a ridiculous antibiotic regimen.
The judge, by the way, Judge Robert Whitwell, former JUCO quarterback.
Yeah.
In Mississippi.
Played. Yeah. And then during the break, when the judge went back to quote deliberate, which if you listen to him read his order, it took him over an hour. And he deliberated for like, I think, less than an hour. So there's no way he wrote his order.
That man must type 7 million words.
No, there's no way he wrote his order during the deliberation. Right?
No, we all know that. Actually, the Bediako case kind of taught me this. The attorneys send in if we win, here's how the order should read.
The order. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got something you can copy and paste from.
Right. But while he's deliberating, Trinidad is signing autographs for people, signing their like ties and
signed a tissue box.
Boxes of Kleenexes and whatever. And then to cap it all off, and this was the greatest thing and probably the most bizarre I've ever seen in covering all these court hearings and stuff, is the judge got visibly and audibly emotional while reading his decision in granting Trinidad an extra year of eligibility on the brink of tears.
Are we sure he was audibly emotional? Like, because we played the video on my On Three show. He just gave out because he'd been reading for an hour.
I don't know.
My favorite part you haven't mentioned yet, Ross.
Oh, yes.
The NCAA just left.
They peaced out.
They just left. Out, yeah.
They knew. They I'm sure they knew.
I can't blame them.
Yeah, they knew by the way that hearing went, it was pretty obvious where this decision was, where it was going. And there was a little bit of a rumor that, and it started on social, that the judge got a signed football from Trinidad, which would have really been the cherry on top of all this. I had to find out about this.
If this was
the courthouse and got the secretary. I'm like, hey, I just was curious. Like, did the judge receive a signed football from Trinidad? And she's like, hold on 1 second. And there's 20 seconds of pause where she's clearly going into the judge's chambers and asking him. And she came back, unfortunately, and said, no, he didn't get a signed football.
This is the kind of stuff.
Robert Whitwell is getting the royal treatment at Vaught Hemingway Stadium this year, no matter what.
Yes.
This is the kind of stuff that, like, I'm sure somebody out there is listening and they're just absolutely outraged. And that's fine. But this is probably, like, the only way I can relate to this is how I felt when I would get phone calls from NCAA enforcement officers who would say, like, yeah, Dabo and Nick stopped by our office today, and everybody stopped what they were doing in the enforcement office to take pictures with them.
Yeah,
it's always been this crooked.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, I know we're involving actual courts now, but like it always will be. It's always about fandom. Like, I know people are outraged, I guess, but like, we didn't get here by accident. We got here because of an absence of oversight.
The Shambliss case. Because everybody's like, oh, this is going to inspire copycats. And I do think the legal strategy will inspire copycats.
Sure.
Filing in state court, making a contract dispute rather than trying to do a class action antitrust suit in federal court. But here's the thing. How many really good players in any sport get to year five and get done with year five and did not play a single play of their sport in the first 2 years there, or in two separate years, without a massive injury? And you're not going to find many. You're not going to find many that schools would want to keep on their roster who couldn't play for the first 2 years, who couldn't sniff the field for the first 2 years. Trinidad Shambliss is a really unusual case. Yeah. Joey Aguilar is not an unusual case.
Well, one of the things, too, that keeps coming up, I keep hearing, and it kept coming up in response to my story after the hearing and during the hearing, is, hey, why doesn't he just go pro? Why would he want to stay in college? Well, first of all,
Well, that's easy.
I don't know about you, but I had a lot of fun in college. College is fun. College is fun.
And you weren't
one.
Making number $5 million a year, which is what he may be
right,
making this
he,
year.
He had agreed back in December to a contract that's, over $5 million in compensation. So imagine being a college kid and making $5 million plus, which is more than he would have made. I think, Andy, right, you know the numbers of this. If he wasn't drafted outside of like the top 15, he would not have been able to make, $5 million plus dollars next year in the NFL.
Yeah. It's pretty easy. It's just money, guys. It's guaranteed money. Like, this is the same. I mean, Diego Aguilar, well, Aguilar's a little bit of a different situation as it relates to Tennessee, but like, this is probably for most of these individuals the last time they can make this much money playing the sport.
And that's why
I do think Trinidad is a different case in terms of football talent too. I think he can make an NFL roster. I think he'd be in the NFL a while. Now, I will say from talking to people at the Senior Bowl, there were still a lot of people who thought if he has to come out, he's still a day three pick. So that'd be
it's a size concern.
6th, 7th round.
Yeah.
We're talking about size here. It's okay to say that. Like, I mean, we all laughed when Diego's real measurements came out. Like, this is just a size concern. These guys can achieve at the highest level at this level, but their ability to earn money at the next one is in question. So we're not talking about, they're not going to be 35 doing this. Like, this just goes back to like, give them six. Just give it. It's a 6-year window. Or don't count JUCO or whatever.
I've always said 5 to play 5. No waivers. If you get hurt, too bad. Like,
no waivers, no red shirt. Make it clean. Make it easy.
Yeah. If there's no waiver process, like the waiver process is what they were fighting in this case, fighting over.
Yes.
If there's no waiver process, there's nothing to fight over. There's nothing to argue about.
They're fighting over the waivers, all of them, virtually. All these cases are about denied, almost all of them are denied waivers, right?
And hadn't been such an arbitrary process for 50 years, then maybe we wouldn't find ourselves here.
Bingo!
But the problem is they can't do 5 for 5 right now because of the lawsuits and how it would impact.
Because everybody else, there will be a class action suit.
Then there would be a class action, number one. And number two, the lawsuits they're currently fighting, that would not help them in those lawsuits if they just all of a sudden granted an extra year to everybody.
It's never going to stop. You're going to have to accept that there will be a line of demarcation where you say, we're going to do it this way, and you have to deal with that.
Which is NIL, right? Mm-hmm. NIL became a thing, and lo and behold, we got the house settlement because there was a lawsuit on behalf of previous players to get their NIL back, to get their NIL compensation back pay. So that's where we are.
They're going to claim inability. They're going to claim outrage. And then eventually you take them to the highest court in the land or to a definitive moment. You break them open and then you do what you intended to do in the first place. That's the lesson that we learned from Alston. The inevitable will occur. They're just going to create as much inertia as possible in the process. And the price we're paying, and I don't think it's that big a price, is that we have these sort of, we're in a very weird transition era of college sports. I do think in 15 years, we're going to look back and be like, oh man, do you guys remember the 2020s when it was different every year and no one knew what to do and this wasn't settled and that wasn't settled? This is the era that we're living in, but we're also paying off a tab of the previous 80 years of the sport.
Right. Right. This is the transition from whatever it was before to a real full-fledged business that's being run like a business. And that there will be growing pains and there will be a tab to be paid, I think is the right word to describe it. Because if you want to get to the 5 to play 5, you're just going to have to settle with the people who sue you because you did do all that.
Yes. And be cautious if you're listening or watching this and you're not in the industry, be cautious when someone from an authority position or an outside authority position, specifically in politics, starts to talk about a doomsday scenario, because we now have enough data over the last couple of years to realize that none of those doomsday scenarios have actually come in.
They're still making tons of money. I'm talking about
when they pay players, no one's going to care. The sport's going to fall apart. No, it's not. Ratings have never been better. Attendance is up. Like, it's just simply not true. So be very, very careful when people talk about college sports being broken, because they're completely okay with cracks and fissures on the side that they benefit from, right? So that guy in Missouri that Ross was reporting on a couple days ago, senator or congressman, Ross?
Senator.
What's his name?
Senator Eric Schmidt.
Okay, I would love if Eric Schmidt, and I could already tell based off of his alignment and voting record, I'm curious if he thought there was something broken in college sports when Jimbo was owed $70 million in dead money. The answer is, of course, no. It's just that now that you have this much more player agency, the sport is ending. So just be very careful who you listen to, and be very careful when they say things like that sound too big to be true, because they aren't true.
Also, if they keep saying this is going to, we're never going to be able to afford this, but and yet they still hire coaches for more, yet they still pay those buyouts even bigger, they're lying to you. Because clearly the money's there.
I remember a year or two ago, everyone's like, "We're gonna these buyouts in the coaching contracts—they're gonna change. People are gonna stop signing these coaching contracts."
They like haven't. The remember the I think it was the week I was at the U.S. Capitol for the alleged vote of the SCORE Act when it got stopped at the last minute, and I think it was the week before was when Lane Kiffin signed the $93 million deal. Yeah. I remember somebody at the Capitol or around the Capitol telling me, not great timing on that.
Yeah. And when they want to fire him in 3 years and they owe him all that money, I guarantee you a politician in Louisiana is going to be like, none of this would be happening if we didn't have to pay those players. So just be careful who you absorb information from.
Well, I get all my information on YouTube from Mr. Beast.
Effortless transition.
Yeah, there you go.
I wasn't going to talk about this, but Godfrey got me intrigued last week. We're gonna discuss this because it's not just a Mr. Beast story.
Yes,
this is a Phil Knight story and a Cody Campbell story, and an everybody else with money story, and it has to do with paying them damn players, and how you pay them, and how much you pay them, and how frequently you pay them. Can Mr. Beast buy a national title? It sounds like YouTube SEO, because that's what it is. But Godfrey says it could happen, and I want to know how it could happen. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer. I am Andy Staples with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. And we talked about this briefly last week, and it very much intrigued me, something Godfrey said, because I had just sort of dismissed it when it came out. So a couple of weeks ago, somebody asked Mr. Beast. If you don't know who Mr. Beast is, you're probably old like me.
I had to just Google, by the way.
If you don't know who Mr. Beast is, schedule your colonoscopy.
Yeah, you're old like us. Mr. Beast is one of the most popular people on YouTube. I believe he has 466 million subscribers on YouTube. Basically, every video he puts out gets the viewership of the Super Bowl.
What does he do?
Well, he does TBD, Ross. Like, it started with him counting to 100,000.
What?
That was where he kind of caught.
Man,
caught hold.
I feel so old.
But what he started doing after that was getting very real money and giving it away. Like, I'm going to give away $1 million today. And then it became these challenges. Like, I'm going to stack $5 million in a pyramid and whoever climbs to the top first wins, that sort of thing. And high production value and all that. People love it. People love it. So the guy has really taken off. So somebody asked him on Instagram a few weeks ago, he's based in North Carolina, and somebody asked him, would you be willing to donate $100 million to ECU, to East Carolina? He's from Greenville, North Carolina, which is where East Carolina is. Would you be willing to donate $100 million to East Carolina to win a national title? And I thought, no, $100 million would win you a national title. This poor naive soul on the internet asking Mr. Beast. As Mr. Beast said, should I do this? Which he's one of those, if he asks, should I do this? Sometimes he actually does this. So I brought it up on the show, and Godfrey's like, yeah, $100 million, you could get in the mix. And I want to know.
Okay.
If Mr. Beast writes a check tomorrow to East Carolina for $100 million.
What happens?
How could East Carolina theoretically build a team that might compete for a national title? And how long does that take? And how do you divvy up the money? How do you do it?
The reason I wanted to talk about this is it's twofold. One, the power of these YouTube celebrities, I think we are not the intended audience to understand the magnitude of this.
Clearly there's, not.
Like, we have done our damnedest as parents to basically eliminate YouTube, other than the College Football Inquirer on Yahoo, from our kids', you know, media diet, right? Because it's just filled with crap. And yet they are still ardent followers of this Ryan Trahan.
Yeah, my kids with Dude Perfect, like,
yeah,
whatever Dude Perfect said when my kids were seven, they would have listened. Like, those guys, the Purple Hoser and like all of those guys, they would have listened to them.
I'm in deep trouble. Okay, so it's that. I was kind of fascinated that Andy invoked someone like Mr. Beast. And then second, I had a conversation. I'm going to be really careful about this. I had a conversation with a person who is in charge of the NIL distribute, like how you spend the money, the roster building for a Group of Five program a couple months ago. They are working on a plan to court an entity to sort of do a very public, almost like buy-in of the team. And I'll leave it at that. I really cannot say any more than that. I probably shouldn't have said that, but this fell directly into like what you're talking about. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with this person, like how this would work. And, you know, it was all just kind of a hypothetical situation. And so then I went and asked this person after you said this, Andy, how this would work and what the dollar figure would be at the, it's going to take a long time for me to say Group of Six. Sorry. So I'm going to keep saying G5 because I've been doing it for 15 years. Okay. Sorry. So at the group, at the G level, we're going to start calling it the G League. That won't be confusing.
Oh, wait.
That won't be confusing. All right. So I said, hey, Staples has this thing, I said, if you gave ECU $100 million in NIL for 1 year, could they win a natty? And I threw it to him. And he said,
it doesn't have to be 1 year, but let's say it is 1 year.
So 1 year.
It's $100 million. No. It's $100 million infusion. I just said, like, here is the check. Do with it what you will. And he said, CFP, yes. After that, obviously it's a crapshoot. So what he's saying is like, no matter what you do, you're still subject to the whims of the bracket.
Which is what I think people don't understand. Like, so I was at the Orange Bowl, which is probably the best example of this.
It was two
teams funded by literal billionaires who are worth, you know, Phil Knight and Cody Campbell are worth what Mr. Beast is worth.
That was a
thousands of
issue.
Times over. And
that was a quarterback issue. That, to me, that one is like, it is to your point, Andy, but also like I just look back at the Texas Tech's entire season down the stretch and I was like,
but then Oregon got boat raced by Indiana.
Well, they had our reliable Honda pilot, Fernando Mendoza.
Phil's a billionaire too.
So. Sometimes you buy the wrong quarterback.
Mr. Beast is worth $2.6 billion, by the way. Wow.
Is he? Oh my God, he's a billionaire. Oh, I wasn't really
a YouTuber.
Sorry, Mr. Beast. I was not familiar with your, I was thinking he was $100 million. Okay, he's already a billionaire. So he and Cody Campbell are kind of in the same neighborhood then.
Close, probably.
So I started to tease the number down because like Andy's number was sort of a hypothetical, hyperbolic statement.
I wasn't thinking in a year. I was thinking maybe you take that 100.
Well, he took it. He took your theory. This is where he's headed. He said at least 20 at that level to have a shot at a natty. Plus, you still have to have a good plan with it. So the working theory right now is that if a G6 team has a guaranteed 20 in NIL, they should be CFP eligible, meaning like in that 1-2% of all the group schools to get in and then get that slot.
But I think
if you're spending more,
you're gonna have to overpay a little bit to get them to come there.
You're psychic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just wait.
That's right. Okay. Just wait. He said 40 in a single season would let you compete at the very, very top and truly push for national title contention. 40 in 1 year at a G school. All right.
In addition to the rev share.
Whatever your situation might be.
Ross told us about last week.
Yes. So the thing is, and I'm scrolling through all my notes here. He said specifically exactly what you said, which is because of the brand, let's call it brand confusion in this case, and let's stick with ECU, okay? You would not spend the 20 the same way another school would. You would actually have to over-index. That's why he mentioned the 40, because you have to pay against the brand confusion, meaning you're overpaying at every position relative to market price to get them there in the first place, because there's going to be negative recruiting on it. There's going to be chatter about you're not going to get developed, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to pay a premium against market price at ECU, which is where the 40 number came from.
There's kids that just wouldn't go, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, even with the money, even if you overpay, they're just not going to go there.
And this was my question, because I think Harold's done a hell of a job at ECU.
Yeah.
But do you use some of that money to buy a more expensive coach and coaching staff?
I said, Andy threw out 100 is 100 overkill. And he said, well, defined overkill because you wouldn't turn it down. And at some point, it would be hard to spend all of that in a cycle. It would also be hard in one portal window cycle. He said, but hang on, a couple swear words, if you would pay egregiously high for some positions in the first window to make sure they came, then you're starting a legacy brand. It's what Texas Tech has to pay a little bit more for these guys up until right now. So exactly what we just said, I have someone in personnel saying Texas Tech overspent.
Your person, if I took the 100 and split it 50 one year and 50 another year.
Yeah.
And I signed some of the people I signed to 2-year deals so I could start get a little continuity going. So my target date for, let's say I'm doing this. We're imagining we did this before this portal window. So if we did it before this portal window, we'd be building a roster for 26, but my target date for the national championship contention would be 27.
Well, so you're fighting. There's two things I want to talk about. You're fighting the conception of the player and their agent, which we established a little bit. He gave me a specific example there for a second. But then also he thinks it's a 2 to 3 year window you'd have established. So maybe it's like 45 and then 25, and then you spread the rest out over 2 more years. And so you're creating something like a 4 year window. Something like a 4 year window.
Yeah. And if you're successful, you're getting more money to use in the successive years.
So the example he gave, and this is at his particular school right now, so I'm going to clean this up a little bit to protect the source. What the problem they're having right now is in the group level, they're offering pretty good money at a lot of these schools to like top line FCS players, but they can't compete with the Big Four, right? Especially the Power Two. So what the Power Two is actually doing, it's tricky. These players could go for $100K. Like a defensive lineman for $100K, they could go to the group, become an all-conference player, right? Mm-hmm. And then get drafted, be able to put a lot on tape. What they're experiencing right now, and this is where it would factor into our ECU issue, is so let's say this group school pays $100, and let's say a Big Ten team comes in and says, we're going to give you $200. The kids are going there, even though the kids, their agents, and their families know they're going to be a role player at best. These are depth ads, right?
Right.
So these kids are choosing the bird in the hand, the extra $100K in the one season over the ability to basically ball out in 1 year at half that cost and up their profile. Now, would that trend continue? This is why you have to overpay. And what he's saying is Texas Tech had to go with elite talent at elite positions and say, we're Texas Tech. We're not Ohio State or Alabama. So we got to prove it to you on the bottom line first.
Got to come to Lubbock, West Texas.
Yeah, you also got to live in Lubbock.
And Greenville, North Carolina, actually kind of a little bit easier to get to. Barbecue scene is amazing. Bee's Barbecue.
Knew that was going to
drive from Andy. The Skylight Inn. So it's pretty incredible. But I think I get where you're coming from. So Texas Tech, you're talking about David Bailey. You're talking about Lee Hunter, people who were at premium positions that could have gone anywhere that you do have to pay a premium for to get them to come to Texas Tech.
Yes.
Your premium is even more when you're trying to get them to come to East Carolina.
Correct. So that's why the 100 is necessary, because you have to overpay against market bias. I guess you could call it the bias of the market for at least one cycle, if not two. You also need positive word of mouth recruiting from those kids you initially pay. And then the other thing is you've got to show some sort of feasibility plan there. Although I really like everything that's happening at ECU football right now. Like, I think Blake Harrell's a rising star. I really like what he did in the turnaround year as an interim. ECU historically kind of goes back to my old,
it's also one double A. If you're good, they truly embrace it. They pack the place. They're loud.
Y'all,
it's fun.
I know we all know this, but I think people would be shocked to understand how big that stadium is, how much they used to pack it out. It really was a little pocket universe in college football for years, because that side of the state wasn't well recruited for a long time, but you had a lot of talent. You had a lot of talent in some lower income areas in Eastern Carolina that didn't, you'd have eligibility issues getting in. And ECU lived in this liminal space for a couple of years, the way Southern Miss did, and they would clean up and kick ass. And that kind of all fell apart. They had budget issues for a long time. So Andy, your specific suggestion of ECU, given the fact that we all kind of like their coaching staff and where they're headed, they've kind of finally turned it around, combined with the celebrity of someone like Mr. Beast, just think about,
Have a billionaire who grew up in their community.
But back up for a second, because I think we're answering our question or for our biggest problem. Our biggest problem, we said, was going to be market bias of the individual player, right? Like, why is this five-star defensive lineman going to go to ECU instead of school X in the Power Four, right?
Money.
But also, think about, do you understand the media apparatus, not you guys, I think a lot of people our age don't understand. Mr. Beast alone, if he really did this, would provide so much
extra attention.
He makes your true
NIL so much more valuable.
Yeah, that's
I don't think
true.
People understand the value of what he brings in terms of exposure. It would dwarf anything that ESPN could do or Fox.
Is Mr. Beast getting through the NIL Go clearinghouse? Do the NIL that's go? Does Deloitte know who Mr. Beast is? I didn't.
That's gonna be a question for you, Mr. Dellinger.
I don't think Deloitte's stupid. I think they pay attention. And like, I'm not kidding. Like, if you go to Mr. Beast's YouTube page and look at the views, it is a Super Bowl broadcast, essentially.
It is more
I'm
valuable.
Right now,
than,
Andy.
It is
I'm
it would be now. More valuable to especially to a 19-year-old brain.
Mr. Beast.
For branding than anything ESPN or Fox could offer. And this is also what terrifies major media corporations at night. News Corp and Disney, they are mortified of these people because they're doing it outside the boundaries. There's really
And remember, Mr. Beast has crossed over. Mr. Beast has a deal with Amazon.
Yeah. You could let me put it this way. If Mr. Beast lent his very bespoke celebrity to a sort of Hard Knocks style program through third-party rights, which ECU would be, they would be within their deal to license out, they would be the most watched supplementary football program on Prime and probably across sports streaming. And if people think I'm insane right now, it's probably because you're 45 or 50 and you don't understand the power of these YouTube celebrities.
Oh, okay.
But these kids do.
Wrexham, good example.
Yes.
Welsh soccer program was in the, fifth division?
They were awful, yes. I watched the first two seasons and I kind of take it off.
So Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, they're in the championship now, which is the second division.
Yes, and if things go the way they are, they will probably have to take on additional investment because the premiership
the
is
Premier League.
So they could be in the Premier League in the next 3 years, and it would complete the greatest whatever you want trajectory or glow up of a soccer franchise in the world in history. That's how
and Ryan Reynolds is an A-list movie star.
Yeah,
but he still probably doesn't have the reach of Mr. Beast.
Correct.
Would you risk dying for $500,000? That's one of his.
Yes, there you go.
YouTube posts.
The hell
survive
a
100
right
days
there.
Trapped in a private jet and then keep it. Wow. I might have to watch some of these. I'll report back.
Okay.
Ross is going to be subscriber 466,000,001.
My wife is overheard the pod in the next room, and she just texted me live while we're taping and said, "What are y'all doing talking about Mr. Beast?"
See, there you go.
There you go.
We're buying East Carolina national title. That's what we're doing.
By the way, if any of this makes you wince, it's no less unbecoming than the DOD contractors and oil barons that currently fund this sport. I mean, this is just the next evolution of a meddlesome booster.
As I slip my Nike shoes off. Congratulations, East Carolina, on your national title.
Yeah.
And your docuseries.
Yeah, go Pirates.
Poor Mr. Beast.
Don't
the,
be
the Pirates
him.
Are going to inundate him now.
I want to cut. Wait, did we just do a consulting firm thing again? I need a cut.
We 2%
of this deal.
East Carolina should, when they celebrate their first national title, I mean, text need to be written, all three of us.
Well, Ross has ethics, so I'll take his.
He doesn't have that many ethics.
Not really.
Yeah, he's a real reporter. I'm just an idiot on the internet.
Real, quote unquote.
We will be back on Thursday. Maybe we'll buy another team a national title. We'll talk to you then.